streets are screaming now. They brought death to hometown boys, death to hometown boys, death to hometown boys, death to hometown boys.
Greetings, this is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus, and this is Alternative Visions, where we talk about solutions to crises, not just the facts. Okay. Today we're going to talk about something that happened in the news just recently, and that was another decision by Obama administration to gut part of their already questionable health care law, Obamacare, as it's sometimes called. This was the decision last week to suspend the mandate for companies to provide health insurance for another year, instead of it taking effect on January 1st of 2014, it will be put off to January 1st of 2015, conveniently after the midterm elections. Nice timing. Well, we want to talk about that law, and let me just say, for the record, I am an ardent supporter of Medicare for All. Okay, that's the only long-term solution. I might have even agreed to the public option as a transition to Medicare for All, but since Obama unilaterally pulled that in passage of his bill in order to get the support of insurance companies. By the way, this is a not a health care bill. You got to understand, Obamacare is not a health care bill. It is a health insurance company reform in a minor sense, bill. And not really designed to improve health care affordability, as we will see, for most of us folks. So, yes, Medicare for All, the only solution. Public option, workable transition. Neither of those exist. One wasn't even talked about, Medicare for All. Negotiations of this bill in 2010 would not even allow the discussions to occur. And public option was pulled. Okay, so what we get is an Obama Nation Care bill, as I call it. You know, my reasons here are not the same as you will find among Tea Partiers on the right and conservatives and corporations. But the way this bill has been crafted and what's now beginning to look like an unwinding of the bill, the beginning of an unwinding of the bill itself over the next several years, I've always been opposed to it because it does not really control health care costs, which is the big problem. Okay, we have a crisis today because ever since the early 90s, starting with the Clinton administration, they have allowed insurance company, health insurance companies, to become shadow banks. What does that mean? Well, you know, health insurance companies used to pay 95 cents out of every dollar. 95 cents out of every dollar would go to some benefit. So they had a profit rate of roughly 5%. Okay. Highly regulated. With Clinton, that changed. And Clinton opened the opportunity for health insurance companies to become banks, like other insurance companies are essentially shadow banks, meaning they make most of their money by investments, not in their primary business of providing insurance. Okay, so health insurance companies were allowed under Clinton to go out and merge and acquire each other. They were exempted from the antitrust laws, conveniently. So what did they do? Well, we started getting private health insurance companies borrowing from Wall Street. And, of course, Wall Street is going to give you money to buy up your competitors only if you have a greater return on profitability. And they, Wall Street, demanded that the health insurance companies pay 22% return to their stockholders, i.e., in other words, investment banks and so forth. So what did insurance companies do? They started squeezing people. In other words, we know the litany of all their abuses, but basically it was they only wanted to insure healthy people and everyone else, people with recurrent conditions and so forth, were charged exorbitant funds, driven out of the health insurance And it's in the 1990s that we start getting a sharp increase in millions of people of uninsured. Okay. So they raised their insurance rates in order to fund their mergers and acquisitions. And their profitability rose. And it set off a price increase throughout the healthcare industry. In other words, with insurance companies making huge amounts of money, profits, hospitals say, well, gee, why can't we get in on that that gravy train? And they started raising too, and then doctors said, well, gee, you know, hospitals, insurance companies are making bucks, so why don't we do it too? And the solution under Clinton was managed care. Hmm? Set up managed care, which is just a euphemism for people pretty much cutting their own costs. In other words, put the burden of the cost cutting on the consumer with managed care. Privatize it in the sense that not a full privatization, but shift the cost burden to the patient. Right? Let them figure out how much they need to cut. That's what managed care is, basically. And that was Clinton's version. And then we get to George W. Bush, and what did George W. Bush want to do? He wanted to further truly privatize it by setting up health savings accounts. Some success in that, according to Bush, occurred, but did not really reach the full development of allowing insurance companies and the healthcare industry to make super profits. And but, of course, what Bush did was pass the prescription drug law in 2005. And what did that do? Well, that was a big pork barrel for the drug companies, right? Because part of that law was that the drug companies could charge whatever they want. And, of course, drug prices doubled, tripled, and they're still increasing at double-digit rates. And part of that bill was the government could not even negotiate reduced prices. States could not even negotiate reduced drug prices with these drug companies. And the drug companies charge whatever they want and cost us $50 billion a year, $500 billion so far. And by the way, really drove up the federal budget deficit because there was no taxes imposed, no payroll tax imposed to pay for prescription drugs. Came out of deficits. So a good part of the deficits of the last decade, federal government deficits, have to do with unfunded Part D prescription drug bill. That was George Bush's contribution. Health savings accounts, in other words, totally privatize health insurance, have people go out and buy their own individual health insurance plans, kind of like 401ks in pensions. You know, 401ks completely destroyed the pension system in this country. And HSAs were designed to do essentially the same for the employer-provided health care system in this country. Okay, so they've been chipping away, making it more expensive, and reducing benefits and so forth. And then we get to the crisis here, because as the prices rise for folks, what do? They drop their coverage. And we had 50 million people uninsured when Clinton left office. And, of course, today they say there's still only 50 million uninsured. Don't believe it. It's well over 60 million uninsured in this country today. Do you really believe that with the recent recession and 5 years of no growth that we still, and population growth, that we still have only 50 million uninsured? No way. There's at least 60 million people, maybe more, who are uninsured. So Obamacare is supposed to address that. Now, remember, Obamacare, its goal is to reduce the uninsured by 25 million over the course of the next decade. 25 million, not even half of those who are uninsured over the next decade. 25 million. Well, that's not much of a dent in the uninsured, is it? And it, too, is a company health insurance subsidy bill. It's a subsidy bill for the insurance companies. You know, just as Part D prescription drugs were a subsidy bill for the drug companies. And that's how Obama got the insurance companies to buy into this thing, because it's lucrative. They would have fought it tooth and nail if it were a public option, which would not have been lucrative, or Medicare, which would have put them out of business, which is what they should be. They should be out of business. There's no reason for a private health insurance industry in this country. We spend $2.7 trillion a year on health care, the highest per capita amount anywhere in the world in this country, $2.7 trillion out of a $16 trillion gross domestic product. That's almost 20%. You know, one of every $5 goes to health care. Now, other advanced countries pay about 10% of their GDP for health care, 10%. Why are we paying almost 20, 18%, and they're paying 10%? Well, that's because you got all these paper pushers, middlemen, insurance companies taking the other 8%. We could cut our health care bill almost in half if we had Medicare for All, national health insurance, or national health care. We can get the middleman out of this. Paper pushers, they don't deliver one iota of health insurance or health services, not one iota. What the heck are they in the middle for? Well, to make big profits. Okay. So we want to talk about this latest, which is the latest of a series of questionable developments in Obamacare, which point to the possibility over the next 18 months before January 2015, this thing may significantly unravel. There's a whole host of problems with it, and I want to discuss some of them today. But before I do, I want to diverge just briefly before the break here and talk about our show last week. We talked about the Egyptian Revolution. My guest was Carl Fenimore, an eyewitness journalist to the 2011 and 12 anniversary of the revolution. And as we were talking, the coup was taking place, the military coup in Egypt. Okay, and we're going to have Carl back on next week or the week after, if he's not in Cairo at the time, and talk a little bit more about this development here. You know, what is really going on in Egypt? Well, first of all, it's a true revolution because you have tens of millions of people in the streets, culminating on June 30th, right? And most of them were Islamic folks, Muslim folks, but weren't pushing a theocracy. They wanted democracy. They wanted more democratic rights that they thought they had fought for. And when the elections occurred a year ago, and this guy Morsi of the Islamic Brotherhood was supposed to do something about instituting, right? They got rid of one autocrat there, Mubarak, and they got another one, Morsi. This one, a theocratic autocrat. And Morsi did not introduce any of the reforms people were hoping for, democratic reforms. And, of course, the economy continued to go south in a serious way. Unemployment rise and inflation rise and so forth. So people were under increasing threat. And they wanted democracy, so they took to the streets, and I mean millions of them, tens of millions of them at any one time. You know, can you just imagine 50 to 100 million Americans in the streets across the country protesting lack of democracy? Well, that's kind of what it was, proportionally, in terms of population, in Egypt here in the last week of June. Truly a democratic revolution once again raised its head and said that we will not go backwards. We want these changes. And they weren't getting it from the increasingly autocratic Morsi and Islamic Brotherhood. And that was what was behind this thing. However, the military saw this as an opportunity to re-inject itself into the whole process. And there was a military coup. There's no doubt there was a military coup going on. And is going on right now. Okay. It's a complicated situation. Yes, you had democratic elections in which Morsi got elected last year, a year ago, but no democratic reforms. And then you had millions of people in the street. Well, isn't that democracy, too? What is it? This whole event raises the whole question. What is democracy? The will of the people, the vast majority of people in the street? Or is it electoral? Okay, you elected this guy and so forth. Direct democracy or electoral democracy? This is an example of a big question, a big question. Right. The military used the Brotherhood, you could argue, the Islamic Brotherhood, to slow down the democratic revolution a year ago. And now it is sacrificing the Brotherhood, Islamic Brotherhood, to stop the tens of millions in the street once again. You cannot deny the role of the military. Now, you've got to understand, as my guest Carl Finnemore last week said, that the military are big capitalists. Yes, the military owns maybe 30% of all the factories and businesses in Egypt, according to Carl. 30%. You know, in this country, we have a capitalist military. In Egypt, they have a military capitalists. And it's not quite the same thing. You know, direct owners of production and wealth, the military itself. And no one knows how much money they make and where that money is going and so forth. So there is a complex situation there, an overlay of a military, and which must be viewed as a capitalist force, a military intervention, capitalist intervention, to stop once again, a second time, a democratic, mass democratic movement in the streets, and pitting one half of the movement that was able to obtain some institutional power, the Islamic Brotherhood, right? Pitting them against the secular, you might say, although they are Islamic folks too, movement. The military is manipulating the strings, playing the cards, manipulating the strings, and it remains in the catbird seat over there in Egypt. And until it is knocked off that catbird seat, you will not have a culmination of democratic revolution or even Islamic theocratic revolution. It will continue playing both against each other. Anyway, that's all I have to say. My views on this situation is democracy, democratic mass movements will not be denied, and they raise their head once again. They are not defeated, but they are being outmaneuvered, okay, by the military. A continuing situation will occur there, and very interesting. Anyway, we will have Carl Finnemore, our journalist friend, on hopefully next week, and we will have had 2 weeks of further developments of what's going on in Egypt. Very important. Okay. Now, we want to get back to Obamacare, but first we want to take a little break here, and let's do that. And this is Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions. We'll be back shortly, and we'll talk about what's happening with, is Obamacare unwinding? This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. We're considering this recent announcement by the Obama administration suspending the mandate for companies with more than 50 employers to provide health insurance to their employees. Okay. Originally, this was supposed to take effect, this mandate. In other words, you must provide health insurance to your employees or pay a penalty, Mr. Company. It's supposed to take effect this coming January for 2014. The Obama administration last week said, okay, you can put it off for another year. Okay, so they suspended the company mandate, right? Let's look at that question. What are going to be some of the possible implications of this? We got a 50 full-time worker employee cutoff. In other words, companies with 50 or more full-time employees have to provide the insurance. Exempted are companies with 50 or fewer full-time employees. Now, what's going to happen here is we're going to have millions of employees, additional millions eventually, with companies with 50 to 100 employees, and there's many, many companies. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of these companies with 50 to 100. What they're going to do is change their worker status to 30 hours or less. We're going to get a churn of full-time employees to part-time employees. See, that's that way the employer can avoid paying, having to pay for health insurance for those employees. There's something going to convert full-time to part-time and or lay people off. If they don't provide health insurance and they have more than 50 employees, the company must pay a $2,000 fine per worker, $2,000 fine per worker. Right? Cutoff is really 130 hours a month work. So what we're going to see is a rise in part-time, involuntary part-time employment and or a partial rise in layoffs. And or the companies are going to game these limits and these rules, play games, because they're just sort of going to have to report to the government. And if you think they don't fudge their reports, then you've never been in business, small business, right? So we already have a significant increase in part-time, involuntary part-time employment going on. You may have heard about, we had 90,000 new hires last month in June, and then we revised up April and May and so forth. So look at those numbers, those job numbers, and you will see they come from mostly the gains are in mostly in certain industries, hospitality, restaurants, entertainment, bars, and so forth, retail. That's all part-time employment. There's virtually, except for maybe some assistant managers, no full-time employment in those industries in this country anymore. We have at least a minimum of 40 million part-time employees and another 10 million temp employees who, in fact, end up working part-time during the year because they may be fully employed sometime, and then they're not working at all because they're temps and you know, they're on and off work. So there's over 50 million people, a second-class employee citizenship in this country, who are part-time temps. Sometimes we call these contingent labor. That's the word academics use, contingent, because they don't have a permanent relationship to their employer. They're contingent. 50 million. Now, and of course, if you're working part-time or temp, your wages are extremely low. You are near the minimum wage, at or near the minimum wage in most cases. And what we see in the last 3 months is most of the employment gains have been in part-time temp employment. So companies are hiring part-time and temps at a greater rate, and they are laying off full-time as we speak. Full-time, we got a churn going on. You know, you lay off one full-timer, hire two part-timers, it looks like an employment growth, doesn't it? But in terms of the real wage and income effect, it's no more. Actually, it's less, because part-time employees, companies don't have to pay insurance or pensions or anything like that. It's a big cost savings. And that's what's growing. And that's why it appears we have a growth of employment. at the same time we have a growth of employment, we have a decline in wages and earnings going on, which is a reflection of the fact that these folks are making less. So that's not so good for the economy to have declining earnings. Earnings, of course, are your hourly wage times the number of hours you work in a week. That's what we call earnings. That's not the same as hourly wage. When you hear hourly wage reported by the government, that's full-time employees. They don't factor in part-time employees that are growing. But when you say earnings, you are taking hourly wage, whatever it is, times the number of hours you work. So earnings, weekly earnings, is a far more important indicator than hourly wage. And weekly earnings are falling 1 to 2% per year as we add more and more part-timers to the mix and temp employees to our total employment mix. So one big problem, to sum up here partially, with the Obamacare is it will create more part-time employees, no doubt, and it will result probably in more layoffs of full-time employees, which will be covered up by the rise of part-time employees in terms of the total numbers, absolute numbers. And, of course, it will mean a further drag on disposable income and therefore consumption, which means people are going to spend more on credit in order to maintain their standard of living, which is exactly what they're doing, or they're going to drag money out of their 401k plans to pay for the bills, which is exactly what they're doing, i.e. reduce the savings rate, as they say. So whatever consumption we have going on today is very tenuous, based on more credit, more debt, more reduction in the savings. It's not based on real income growth. And the Obamacare law is going to contribute to this negative trend. Okay, big problem. How big, we don't know. We'll see. We'll see. But I believe many of these smaller employers are going to game the system and find ways to avoid paying either the penalty or the cost of minimum insurance. And as a result, we're going to have more part-time and a lower total wage income. Okay, that's one problem. Right. And now we got the suspension of the mandate. It gives them another year. Okay, so if employers don't have to pay into this thing for another year, that's going to put even bigger pressure on the individuals. In other words, people who go out and buy their insurance themselves. And how is it going to put more pressure on them? That means that the insurance companies are going to raise their premiums for individuals who are trying to get into this new program, right, through the what's called the health exchanges, the state-level health exchanges. Okay, which raises another problem with the Obamacare. All right, we talked about the problem here with the mandate, suspending the company mandate, and we talked about how it's going to create more part-time employment and unemployment, and that, of course, is going to raise the cost for those who do attempt through the exchanges. Okay. Estimates are that healthy individuals who will start trying to participate in the Obamacare by going out and buying their own insurance on these state health exchanges may see their rates for health insurance increase 2 and 3 times what they are now. Right now they're healthy and they can go and pay so much. But once we set up the exchanges, the health insurance companies are going to have to accommodate the costs of those who aren't participating or who aren't as healthy and participating in the exchanges, so they're going to raise the rates. Okay. Now, let's talk about the health exchanges, the state-level health exchanges. We're very supposed to be very important here for the Obamacare bill. They are the substitution for what would have been the public option. In other words, the whole idea of Obamacare is to set up these exchanges and allow people to compete. It's a market-based approach, you know, and the whole idea is that people are searching, competing, and they see all the different options and plans, that will induce competition among the health insurance companies, and that will lower rates. Competition will lower rates. Well, that's the market fiction, okay? What we're seeing now in anticipation of these exchanges being set up is health insurance rates, particularly for those who already have insurance or union-negotiated plans, are rising at double-digit levels. Yes, health insurance companies are increasing 10 to 20%. And surveys show that they intend to do that next year. Well, putting off this mandate means it's they're going to give more time to raise those rates even further. Okay, that's another negative. Now, the health insurance exchanges are state by state. But what you've got is only 16, I believe, 16 of the states are actually setting up these exchanges. 30-some of them refuse to set up the exchanges. Well, that's another reason why I guess you need a suspension here and a delay. Yeah, most of those states, by the way, are run by conservative Republican governors who are doing everything they can to scuttle even this this weak bill. Right. Under the law, Obamacare law, that means that the federal government has to step in and set up these exchanges. They're not going to get much cooperation from the states. And the government's going to have to pay for it, raising the cost of the whole thing. And this is occurring at a time when the federal government, with the sequestered cuts of another $1 trillion this past March, is cutting federal employment across the board. Well, where are they going to get all the additional federal employees to set up these exchanges? Is an interesting question, when they've got to cut across the board. And they've got to set up these exchanges in 36 states. Well, that's going to be a lot of additional confusion here and difficulty. Once again, the states aren't cooperating, most of them anyway. And that's another problem. That's another problem with Obamacare. Now, the states are, in addition, the Republican-controlled states are choosing to opt out of increasing Medicaid coverage, which is part of the bill as well. Medicaid, that's the federal government program that provides some kind of Medicare-like government health care services to the disabled and the poor and their children. Mostly disabled, mostly poor, mostly very low pay folks are eligible for Medicaid, right? Well, with most of these states, GOP states in particular, opting out, we're going to have even more folks who are uninsured, right? So the 60 million may increase even further, right? And again, Obamacare is only targeting 25 million over the decade. It's not solving the uninsured program problem to any extent. It's not even half of the problem. They're addressing not even half of the problem. And now they're delaying the implementation of it to get past the 2014 midterm elections because they know this thing is in trouble and it could unravel. They just don't want it to accelerate in terms of unraveling between now and the 2014 election. By the way, as an aside here, this suspending the mandate for big corporations, companies with more than 50 employees, has really emboldened the Tea Party in Congress. And now they're going after Obamacare with a renewed vengeance here. And we'll see what that will entail over the next couple of months with the new budget in Washington. Okay. Another problem with this thing is the federal tax subsidies for the uninsured. You know, if you're an individual and you don't have coverage under an employer, and you are low paid, you can get a subsidy from the government to pay for your individual health insurance costs, so about two-thirds, right? Two-thirds. You're still going to have to pay a third yourself, right? Most of the uninsured are low-pay, minimum wage, near minimum wage, or young folks who think that they're indestructible. Now, that means that you, if you're in this category, still have to pay one-third. Well, wait a minute. If you're already low pay, barely making $20,000 a year or less, somehow you got to come up with one-third of it, and the other subsidy, two-thirds, you get at the end of the year in a tax rebate. Well, that doesn't do much for a cash flow problem month to month, week to week, that most of the very low pay folks are struggling with all the time. For example, if you're 40-year-old, the amount you would have to, in non-smoker, 40-year-old, single, and you have to go out and buy this insurance, you're going to pay somewhere between $300 and $500 a month. Okay, if you're a 40-year-old. For example, more specifically, say you're a 40-year-old non-smoker and you're making minimum poverty-level wages, which means that you're somewhere around $12,000, $13,000 a year. The government will subsidize $234 per month. That means you're still going to have to pay out-of-pocket $125 to $200, or even $250. Well, where folks at minimum wage are going to come up with $200 a month. How are they going to afford that? Subsidies notwithstanding, especially subsidies that are paid, reimbursed at the end of the tax year. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, where are these bureaucrats coming from? They have no idea of the situation that tens of millions of people at low pay are confronted with every day in terms of cash flow. How are they going to come up with $100 to $200 more mandated? They must come up with it or they will pay a penalty in their tax bill at the end of the year, 1% of their adjusted gross income. In other words, there's an individual penalty on individuals, tax penalty on individuals, the 1% of adjusted gross income at the end of the year, just as there is a penalty on employers of $2,000 a year if they don't provide this insurance for their workers. There's an individual penalty as well. Oh, but you know what? They suspended the penalty, the mandate, and the penalty for employers, but they haven't suspended the penalty on the individual. Well, I mean, if you're going to suspend the mandate for the company, why aren't you suspending the mandate for the individual? It just shows who's more important in this country, businesses or citizens. Okay. All right, so that's another problem with this whole Obamacare. You know, so, okay, let's recap. So far I've talked about suspending the mandate, right? Not suspending the individual mandate. I've talked about problems of setting up the health insurance exchanges, only 16 so far. Where's the government? How is the government going to set up the rest of them? At what cost when they're laying off federal employees? We talked about how businesses will game the system by not reporting or by creating more part-time and laying people off. Right? We talked about how the GOP states are opting out of the increasing payments for Medicare, how that will result in more uninsured, more than the 60 million, we'll have even more. Federal tax subsidies to individuals are not paid monthly. And at the end of the year, where are people going to come up with money out of pocket? And the individual tax penalty still prevails. Okay. There's more. There's more trouble with this bill. Healthy consumers, will be expected probably to pay, estimates are 2 to 3 times on the exchanges going on onto these insurance exchanges starting in next year than they are paying now. So they're going to have a big cost increase. Again, low paid, $100 to $200 a month, going to go to the health insurance companies. That means $100 to $200 a month for tens of millions of people, low pay, who won't be spending it on something else. And what does that mean for the economy and the recovery? In other words, we're going to shift even more money to health insurance companies. And that will occur with healthy consumers as well. 20% have no coverage via their employer or Medicaid, Medicare in this country, 20%, right? And many of them will choose to pay the 1% adjusted gross income penalty instead of signing up and paying 2 and 3 times more. In other words, they're going to opt out of these insurance exchanges. And if healthy people opt out of the insurance exchanges, the insurance companies are going to raise their costs for those who do join the exchanges. So all the estimates of what it's going to cost, you know, $200, $300, $400 per month are low. It's going to be actually higher. Right. Okay. There are other problems here, and we're going to talk about them, particularly long-term care exemption, nursing homes and so forth, and union negotiated plans, and spending on hospitals by the government. All these things are additional problems that are going to raise their ugly head here over the next 18 months with regard to the Obamacare bill. Okay, let's take another break and come back, and we'll talk about what are the implications of Obamacare for long-term care, nursing home care, for union negotiated plans, and for safety net hospitals. Okay, this is Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions. We'll be back shortly. It's Jack Rasmus, the show Alternative Visions, and we're talking about Obamacare and some of the increasing problems with the program that are becoming more and more evident and reflected in the suspensions of different elements, key elements of the program by the Obama administration as a way to avoid a big crisis becoming evident before the 2014 elections here. Okay, we provided a summary of some of the major emerging problems with this so far. Health insurance exchanges not really being set up, suspension of the mandate, how employers will game this to avoid paying the penalty or avoid providing insurance by creating more part-time workers, and how this is will cause an increase in or a decrease in the hourly wage, which, by the way, already fell 3.8% in the first quarter of this year. Hourly wages fell 3.8% in one quarter. Well, that's an indication we're hiring more and more part-timers. Now, are we doing that simply because of employers avoiding planning and preparing and doing, avoiding the Obamacare, or is this a general development? Well, this is a general development, but part of that is the incentive to do so by the Obamacare Act or bill legislation and so forth. We'll be talking more about wages and what's happening in future shows here. But anyway, once again, healthy consumers will be paying more. As we said, tax subsidy by the government is a joke. And states are opting out of Medicaid, the cracks in the foundation appearing everywhere. Now, so far we've been talking about how the low pay are going to have a great difficulty paying for this, but they're going to get some subsidy in their tax, et cetera. All right. Now, there are even more people, though, who won't get any subsidies. If you're making more than $30,000, $32,000 a year, you will not get any subsidies, and you will still have to purchase the insurance. Okay, that's an awful lot of people. That's even below the median income level. So we're talking about the majority of the workforce. If they're not already covered by their employer or by Medicaid, they're going to have to go out and buy this insurance. All right, we showed how even if you were low paid and got some subsidy, you would still have to pay anywhere between $100 and $200 a month, even if you were low paid and eligible for subsidy. Well, if you're not eligible for subsidy and you're making over $32,000 a year, roughly, and by the way, that amount will be determined state by state, but probably in the low 30s here, you're going to have to pay anyway. Well, let's just look at some of the numbers. If you're making $33,000 a year, this is the number for Virginia. If you're making $33,000 a year, you're taking home about $2,800 a month gross. Okay, let's assume an average of a 20-25% total tax bill. Your net, your disposable income is about $2,000 a month, right? If you're going to have to pay for this insurance at $200 a month, okay, that's going to take a big whack out of your disposable income, isn't it? $200 a month if you're making in the $30,000 to $40,000 range. How many people can really afford that $200 a month additional bill, right? I mean, it's pretty tough living on that amount in this country. Are they going to purchase it? Many of them just simply won't. They'll boycott. They won't purchase it. And okay, so what are you going to do about it? Federal government? Well, you're going to put them all in jail, right? You're going to hit them with a tax penalty, which will make it even more difficult for them to purchase, especially when wages and earnings are falling. So average of $200 a month if you don't get a subsidy, and average about $100 a month or more even if you do get a subsidy. That's going to be a terrific whack on consumer spending because we aren't really spending anything else new here. This is money that could be used to purchase other things and grow GDP that's now going to be siphoned off to guess who? Oh, these poor health insurance companies who, you know, are in such dire straits for 20 years now. They need more profits. Big problem. Now, that's not the whole picture here. What about long-term care? Well, that was exempted by Obama himself after the passage of the act. Oh, because it would be too expensive. You know how much it costs per week, average, to have an elderly person in a nursing home? $500 to $750 a week, average. To have an elderly relative in a nursing home today. Those numbers are doubling as we speak. People who have relatives, aged parents in nursing homes, are opening up letters reading a doubling on average of the cost of nursing homes. Okay, why? Well, because nursing homes say, well, we're not going to get any subsidies from the federal government on Obamacare. Let's just raise our cost. All right. Becoming impossible. Don't get old folks in this country. Not in this country. You're in trouble. Another problem. Employer union negotiated plans, health care plans. Right? The typical employer union negotiated plan. This will boggle your mind. How much does it really cost for what's called a Cadillac plan? Which is just, 20 years ago, Cadillac plans were considered the norm. Now they're called Cadillac plans because everything else has declined in coverage and so forth. Right? So now it's considered, the gold plan, the Cadillac plan, union negotiated plans. And unions, but the last 20 years, have been foregoing wage increases just to maintain their benefits for their members. And members, in unions everywhere, public and private, have been pretty much in agreement. We have to maintain our maintenance of benefits, MOB it's called, MOB negotiations, putting all the negotiated money into these maintain, not improve, just maintain health care, and then not getting wage increases. And, of course, you don't get wage increases, the economy stagnates, and consumer spending, 70% of the economy, cannot stimulate the economy. That's another problem. Okay, what's going to happen with the union negotiated plans? Well, the Obama administration wants to destroy them. Oh, that's a strong statement. Oh, yes. After 2017, if you have one of these Cadillac plans, there's going to be a 40% excise tax by the federal government on these plans. The employer will have to pay 40% immediately, overnight, tax. Well, do you think the unions can even negotiate a 40% increase? No. It's the end of employer-provided health insurance negotiated plans, or even if you don't have a union, employer in plans. It's the end. It's the end of employer health care, insured health care, which began in the 1940s. It's just like they destroyed defined benefit pension plans, replaced them with 401ks, go out and buy your own on the pension side. That's exactly what they're doing here with Obamacare. Obamacare is the last hurrah of union-negotiated health care. After 20 years of foregoing wage increases to maintain health care benefits, it will now be gone, all you union folks out there. It's the end game, right? It's Obamacare is what George W. Bush wanted to do with HSAs. It's just HSAs, George W. Bush, by another name for all you union negotiated beneficiaries here. You know how much it cost? For a typical union negotiated insurance cost, negotiated health plan today, typically the employee pays $1,000 per month and the employer pays about $1,000 per month. We're talking about $25,000 per month for an employer-provided health care insurance plan. Now, that's not counting deductibles, which are about $500, $600 per person. Even after paying $25,000 in premiums a year, you still got to pay $500, $600 deductible and out-of-pocket? Now, that's how bad it's gotten. Well, it's going to get worse. They're going to eliminate them all. That's it, right? What you're going to have is deductibles, $500 to $2,000, $3,000 or more, less benefits being provided for that amount of deductible. Right? One-third of all workers now are paying over $1,000 a year in deductible. Some up to $5,000-$6,000 a year deductibles. In other words, you're going to get health insurance in name only, because that's all you're going to be able to afford, minimal benefits, minimal coverage, and very high costs. This is a scenario, I believe, where Obamacare is going to implode. It's just a question when. And they can wait till after the 2014 elections. Obama won't care after that. 2015-16, you will see major changes in Obamacare. And then it will be a battle back to the drawing boards between vouchers, HSAs, and vouchers versus Medicare for all. Anybody with any sense cannot defend Obamacare. It's unwinding. It's going to continue to wind. The fight should begin once again for Medicare for all. Medicare, get the insurance companies, the middlemen, out of this picture. They're sucking off 8, 9% of GDP, trillions of dollars a year. They don't provide one iota of health care services. What the hell are they doing in this picture? Get them out of it. And we can reduce our health care costs almost in half by going to Medicare for all. If you want a transition of a public option, okay. But the fight 2 years from now is going to be what it was 2 years ago, and that is Medicare versus pay for your own, get very little at great cost. And the health insurance companies get richer and richer. Okay. That's it for today, and we will be back next week, hopefully talking about Egypt once again. with our guest Carl Fenimore. What's happening? Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions.